Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And yes, Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother, the book by Amy Chua about raising her high-achieving daughters, still inspiring discussions. Today's Science Times has an article by pediatrician Perry Kloss that follows up on one aspect of the book, and that is sleepovers. Amy Chua didn't let her daughters have or attend those so-called slumber parties, and Dr. Kloss discovered her fellow pediatricians don't have any official advice for parents who aren't quite so doctrinaire. Dr. Kloss, a professor of journalism and pediatrics at NYU, writes books and contributes to the New York Times, Science Times, and she joins me now as we take your calls on sleepovers, guidelines of your own parents, horror stories, I can only imagine, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Dr. Kloss, welcome back to WNYC. Hi.
Thank you. Hi.
So how old is old enough for sleeping away from home? Do you have an answer?
Oh, nobody has an answer. It depends on the child. It depends on the adventure. It depends on the family. I think that one of the things which just struck me is the way that people were repeating in horror, wouldn't let her children go on sleepovers as if that was a huge, enormous deal. And so many commentators picked up on that I started to wonder, what does the sleepover represent? Who is there anyone with anything to say about it? And does it bring up other issues?
What does it represent?
Well, one of the things that it may represent is kind of a change in childhood in this country in this century. That is to say, one of the historian I talked to suggested that it had something to do with suburbanization, bigger homes, kids having their own room, the growing importance of the peer group, and that this begins to emerge first as a really important part of adolescence and childhood in the 50s and 60s, until by now the idea of maybe a parent who won't allow it horrifies some other parents. Of course, some people are horrified by anything that anybody else does with their children.
Let's bring a caller right in. Leslie in Howell. You're on WNYC. Hi, Leslie.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I've never done this before. I'm very excited.
And you don't even sound nervous. So you're a parent, and I gather you host a lot of sleepovers?
Yes, I do.
And what do you want to say about them?
Well, in my experience, I know I am the mom that my children will always, at the end of a play date, you'll hear the girls whispering, and they're arguing as to whose mom to ask for the sleepover. And I'm usually the one that says yes. I find that it helps me know what's going on with my kids. I know as my son's getting older, I worry about getting a nanny cam. Are the doors locked? Can they walk out?
You'd rather have them there than somewhere else.
Yeah.
Is it also that you get to hear them interact in a particularly intimate way with their friends, and so you learn stuff about what's going on in their lives?
Absolutely. I feel like our computer is in the family room, so I know what they're doing, how much time they're spending in it. And then I take comfort in knowing, wow, at 12 years old, my daughter's still playing with dolls. I know what they're doing. I know they're up there playing brats. I eavesdrop.
There you go. Leslie, thank you very much. So, Dr. Kloss, one argument for hosting sleepovers.
You don't really need an argument for hosting sleepovers or for doing other things that your kids think are fun and that you enjoy as well. This is something which I think in large part has been driven by what children enjoy and by the pleasure that their parents take in helping them enjoy it. But I think any parent who's hosted a lot of sleepovers, and I've hosted more than a few myself, we also know that there are some things you want to keep an eye out for. And occasionally, and anyone who's hosted a lot of sleepovers has helped the occasional child go home at 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock at night when it turns out for one reason or another that child has changed her mind or changed his mind and this doesn't look like such a good idea after all. And that's fine, too.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any sleepover horror stories? I mean, that's a fairly tame, tender one where the kid just doesn't really want to sleep over at somebody else's house. Any other trouble spots?
Well, I think one trouble spot that sometimes emerges and this, again, this is not a huge big deal. This is something where you need to be sensible as a parent. And, sometimes when you host the sleepover as a parent, you're the bad guy. You do bang on the door. You do interrupt people when they're doing something that they think is a lot of fun. And you go from being the wonderful parent who was willing to host the sleepover to, you know, the terrible parent who stopped the really exciting activity just because it looked like somebody was going to get hurt or somebody was getting upset or somebody was getting scared. And that's, you know, just a part of being a parent is figuring out the times when you're willing to be popular and the times when you're absolutely willing to be unpopular.
Karen in Ringwood, you're on WNYC. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I just wanted to let you know I'm one of the moms that do not really approve of sleepovers. I find the lack of sleep that a child may have while at someone else's house or even at mine, if I do the best that I can to get them to sleep, just disrupts the family for 2 or 3 days afterwards. And my children are crabby and nasty and take it out on me, and it's just really not worth it for me right now at this point in their lives.
Karen, thank you. And we saw a comment on, you know, on the page for your article, Dr. Klass, where a parent commented similarly that her child was so impossible to deal with when sleep deprived that she gave up on allowing sleepovers.
Well, that's what I mean by you know your child, you know your family, you know your situation. And just to come back to what I said at the beginning, I was a little bit surprised by the way that people took on this issue as if it was a terrible cruelty on the part of the mother who wrote the book to forbid sleepovers. My memory is when I was growing up, there were kids who were always allowed to sleep over, there were kids who were sometimes allowed to sleep over, and there were kids whose parents really didn't like it, and that it wasn't something that you would have felt was barring you from childhood happiness. It just didn't seem like a big deal, and that's why I'm with any parent who says, look, I'm looking at my kid at this moment, and I don't think it makes sense.
Right. So that's not what Amy Twa said, I don't think, in the book. It was more about a philosophy of extreme straight and narrow. So it was no sleepovers, no play dates to keep the children on task. That's not the same thing as Karen from Ringwood just called and said.
No, that was specifically with reference to the experience that she had with her children. But, you know, I have a lot of friends, people my age, who look back and say, oh, no, I was never allowed to go on sleepovers. My parents didn't trust other families. For one reason or another, it wasn't something that my parents allowed. And that doesn't seem to loom very large in most of their memories.
Michelle in Maplewood, you're on WNYC. Hi, Michelle.
Hey there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. You have a sleepover story or half a sleepover story?
Two quick stories. One is that when my daughter was very young, she developed 4 very discreet friendships in different areas of her life, and she wanted the opportunity, I guess you heard about it from other kids, to have sleepovers. So the thing that we instituted among these families, because they were fairly young, was the half sleepover. So you go over, you get into your pajamas and brush your teeth, you hang out, you do whatever you do before bedtime, and then at about 10:30, maybe 11 o'clock, the other parent comes to pick you up and scoops you up and takes you home. And they felt very grown up, and they felt like they had this, you know, terrific big kid privilege, but they woke up in the morning in their own beds, and I think that was much more comforting for them.
Michelle, thank you. And Dr. Klass, we have 4 or 5 calls, comments, raising this idea of the half sleepover. Is this the new thing?
Well, it's a very good idea, especially for either younger children or children who, for whatever reason, are nervous about doing this, or parents who feel, as one of our earlier callers did, that actually being out all night really throws a child off and makes life difficult. Because a lot of the rituals that matter most for children around sleepovers have to do with that. You know, putting on your pajamas, being together in the time before bed. And for some children, it's actually very reassuring to know you're going to do all these exciting things and then I'm going to come get you and take you home. And I think one of the things that we have to remember, I'll just say this quickly, is that as we get into an era in which everyone takes for granted that you have sleepovers and sleepovers are a treat, if you're actually a child who is nervous about spending the night in someone else's house or a little anxious or doesn't sleep well when you're not in your own bed or for any other reason this is worrying you, it's really helpful not to feel that, oh, this is something you've got to be able to do because it's what everybody does. So that half sleepover gives the child a way to participate, but then to say, yeah, but my parents want to come pick me up at 11.
Linda from Morristown writes on our page, my 12-year-old is an only child, and I found the sleepover to be a wonderful way for him to experience something akin to what all siblings get to experience. I think it helps his socialization. And Brian in Red Bank calling with something from the former child's perspective. Right, Brian?
Yeah, I just remember having sleepovers as a kid, and I remember it giving me this sort of very interesting glimpse into other people's families and home lives that I don't think I would have gotten. I remember just little things like my one friend whose dad was a cop in Newark, and I remember him coming home at, you know, 2 a.m. after the night shift. And my other, you know, I was an Irish kid with a bunch of Italian friends, and I remember sneaking downstairs and eating stuffed artichokes for the first time and just being exposed to food and the way people interacted in their homes, which was very different than mine. And I just found it a real eye-opening experience at a young age.
Do you remember a story?
Excuse me?
Do you remember a particular thing that you learned?
I just remember sort of being, it was interesting how other families got along and maybe interacted and they yelled at each other. I do remember my friend who's you know, like I said, was a father. He was a cop in Newark, and that was very, this was the 70s, and it was rough. And I remember his mother waiting up for him every night to make sure he got home safely.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he faced, you know, working in the housing projects in Newark as a cop during the 70s, and she just was up all night. And seeing that, you know, was interesting.
Thanks a lot, Brian. So that, Dr. Klass and Linda's story about her only child, also getting to see how other people live, interesting way to look at it.
Absolutely, and there's no question that one of the things that the sleepover represents for children who like it and for families who like it is, it is a kind of increasing independence, but it's a supervised independence. You're not actually going out into the world. You're going out into the home of another family, and we assume that your family has some sense of that family, but you are seeing how other people live, and you are going out into the world, and you are, in a certain sense, you know, in a small, controlled way, leaving home. And it can be all of those things.
Uh-oh, Max in Larchmont has a political, religious conflict story around a sleepover. Is that right, Max?
Hi, am I on the air?
Yes, sir.
Oh, good afternoon. Or it's actually under noon, I'm sorry.
You got 3 minutes.
I'm calling because I'm wondering if the doctor has heard about people having problems with religious and political differences. I have 3 kids. And when they sleep over at other people's houses, especially if they're religious, my wife and I, we teach our children that religion is a pernicious force in the world, and it's a terrible thing. And sometimes the parents of other kids get upset if my kids, you know, tell them that while they're doing their prayers or something.
Well, while they're doing their prayers may not be very nice. But all right, so how do you handle it? Max, how do you handle it?
Well, we just, you know, I don't know if the doctor agrees. I think children should be legally shielded from religion until they're 16. I think it's crazy to expose children to superstitious ideas like that. It makes them dumb. And I think a lot of the kids are swayed when my kids meet their kids and they stop going to Hebrew school and so forth. And I think that's a good thing.
Thank you, Max. Dr. Klass, any response?
Well, I'll just make a general response, which is that if you're going to let your children go over to other people's houses, either for sleepovers or during the day, you're going to have to teach them to be good guests. And, you know, leaving aside your politics and leaving aside your religious issues, if you're going to go into somebody's house and you're going to accept their hospitality, part of growing up is learning to be a good and respectful guest. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to agree with things that you absolutely don't agree with, and it doesn't mean you have to necessarily join in practices which aren't yours, but you do have to learn how to be polite, or is in the great way of the world, you won't be invited back.
Well, Dr. Perry Klass wrote about the sleepover in the Science Times today. As a pediatrician as well as a journalist, discovered that the only official literature that the pediatrics establishment offered on sleepovers was to check your children for head lice when they came back. So maybe there'll be a little more now after this. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Lisa Allison, Jody Avergan, and Paige Cowett produced this program with Alan Smith and Alana Casanova-Burgess. We had intern help today from Kristen Clark and Theo Branham. It's a freecountry.org editor, Anna Sale, and our senior producer is Megan Ryan. That's Jason Isaac at the audio controls. I'll talk to you tomorrow. I'm Brian Lehrer.